Chapter 13. That Monday morning, Alan Popeye Worth was preparing to drill his first deflection on the SD No. 5 borehole. Alan was a Texan, not a typical Texan. He stood 5 feet 4 inches tall, but was as tough as the steel drill with which he worked. 30 years before, he had started learning his trade on the oil fields around Odessa, and he had learned it well. Now he could start at the surface and drill a 4-inch hole down 13,000 feet through the Earth's crust, keeping the hole straight all the way, an almost impossible task if you took into account the whippiness and torque in a jointed rod of steel that long. If, as happened occasionally, the steel snapped and broke off thousands of feet down, Alan could fit a fishing tool on the end of his rig and patiently grope for the stump, find it, grapple it, and pull it out of the borehole. When he hit the reef down there, he could purposely kick his drill off the line and pierce the reef again and again to sample it over an area of hundreds of feet. This was what was meant by deflecting. Alan was one of the best. He could command his own salary and behave like a prima donna, and his bosses would still fawn on him. For the things he could do with a diamond drill were almost magical. Now he was assessing the angle of his first deflection. The previous day, he had lowered a long brass bottle to the end of his borehole and left it overnight. The bottle was half filled with concentrated sulfuric acid, and it had etched the brass of the bottle. By measuring the angle of the etching, he knew just how his drill was branching off from his original hole. In the tiny wood and iron building beside the drilling rig, he finished his measurements and stood back from the workbench, grunting with satisfaction. From his hip pocket he drew a corncob pipe and pouch. Once he had stuffed tobacco into the pipe and lit it, it became very clear as to why his nickname was Popeye. He was a dead ringer for the cartoon character. Aggressive jaw, button eyes, battered maritime cap and all. He puffed contentedly, watching through the single window of the shack as his gang went about the tedious business of lowering the drilling bit down into the earth. Then he took the pipe from his mouth and spat accurately through the window, replacing the pipe, and stooped to minutely check his measurements. His foreman driller interrupted him from the doorway. "On bottom and ready to turn, boss." "Huh?" Popeye checked his watch. 2 hours 40 to get down? You don't reckon a rupture a gut, do you?" "That's not bad," protested the foreman. "And sure as hell it isn't good either. Okay, okay, cut the cackle and let's get her turning." He bounced out of the shed and set off for the rig, darting quick, beady little glances about him. The rig was a 50-foot-high tower of steel girders, and within it the drill rod hung down until it disappeared into the collar. The twin 200-horsepower diesel engines throbbed expectantly, waiting to provide the power, their exhausts smoking blue in the early morning sunlight. Beside the rig lay a mountainous heap of drilling rods. Beyond them, the 10,000-gallon puddling reservoir to provide water for the hole. Water was pumped into the hole continuously to cool and lubricate the tool as it cut into the rock. "Stand by to turn her," Popeye called to his gang, and they moved to their stations. Dressed in blue overalls, coloured fiberglass helmets and leather gloves, they stood ready and tensed. This was an anxious moment for the whole team. Power had to be applied with a lover's touch to the mile and a half length of rod, or it would buckle and snap. Popeye climbed nimbly up onto the collar and glanced about him to make sure all was in readiness. The foreman driller was at the controls, watching Popeye with complete absorption, his hands resting on the levers. "Power up!" shouted Popeye, and made the circular motion with his right hand. The diesels bellowed harshly, and Popeye reached out to lay his left hand on the drilling rod. This was how he did it, feeling the rod with his bare hand as he brought in the power. Judging the tension by ear and eye and touch. His right hand gestured, and the foreman delicately let in the clutch. The rod moved under Popeye's hand. He gestured again, and it revolved slowly. He could feel it was near breaking point, and he cut down the power instantly, then let it in again. His right hand moved eloquently, expressively as an orchestral conductor, and the foreman followed it, the junior member of a highly skilled team. Slowly the tension of the gang relaxed as the revolutions of the drill built up steadily, until Popeye gave the clenched fist OK and jumped down from the collar. They scattered casually to their other duties, while Popeye and the foreman strolled back to the shed, leaving the drill to grind away at a steady 400 revolutions a minute. "Got something for you," said the foreman as they entered the shed. "What?" demanded Popeye. "The latest Playboy." "You're kidding," Popeye accused him delightedly, but the foreman fished the rolled magazine out of his lunchbox. "Hey there!" Popeye snatched it from him and turned immediately to the coloured fold-out. "Isn't that something?" he whistled. "This dolly could get a job in a stockyard beating the oxen to death with her boo-boos." The foreman joined the discussion of the young lady's anatomy, and so neither of them noticed the change in the sound of the drill until 2 minutes had passed. Then Popeye heard it through an erotic haze. He flung the magazine from him and went through the door of the shed white-faced. It was 50 yards from the shed to the rig, but even at that distance, Popeye could see the vibration in the drilling rod. He could hear the labouring note of the diesels as they carried increased load, and he rang like a fox terrier, trying to reach the controls and shut off the engines before it happened. He knew what it was. His drill had cut into one of the many fissures with which this badly faulted ground was criss-crossed. The puddling water from his borehole had drained away, leaving the bit to run dry against dry rock. The friction heat had built up, the dust from the cut was not being washed away, and in consequence the rod had jammed. It was being held tightly at one end, while at the other the two big diesels were straining to turn it. The whole rig was seconds away from a twist-off. There should have been an operator at the controls to meet just such an emergency, but he was 100 yards away, just emerging from the wood and iron latrine beyond the puddling dam. He was desperately trying to hoist his pants, clinch the buckle of his belt, and run all at the same time. "You horse chamber pot!" roared Popeye as he ran. "What the hell are you goofing off?" The words choked in his throat, for as he reached the door of the engine room, there was a report like a cannon shot as the rod snapped. And immediately the diesels screamed into over-rev as they were relieved of the load. Just too late, Popeye punched the earth buttons on the magnetos, and the engine spluttered into silence. In that silence, Popeye was sobbing with exertion and frustration and anger. "A twist-off!" he sobbed. "A deep one! Oh, no! God, no!" It might take 2 weeks to fish out the broken rod, pump cement into the fissure to seal it, and then start again. He removed the cap from his head and with all his strength hurled it on the engine room floor. He then proceeded to jump on it with both feet. This was standard procedure. Popeye jumped on his cap at least once a week, and the foreman knew that when he had finished doing it, he would then assault anybody within range. Quickly, the foreman slipped behind the wheel of the Ford truck, and the rest of the gang scrambled aboard. They all bumped away down the rutted track. There was a roadhouse on the main road where they went for coffee at times like this. When the mists of rage had dispersed sufficiently from his mind for Popeye to start seeking a human sacrifice, he looked about to find the drilling area strangely still and deserted. "Stupid bunch of yellow-bellied baboons!" he bellowed in frustration after the retreating truck, and as the next best thing, went into the shed to phone his managing director. This gentleman, sitting in the air-conditioned offices of Heart Drilling and Cementation, high above Rissick Street in Johannesburg, was a little taken aback to learn from Popeye Worth that he, the managing director, was directly responsible for the twist-off of an expensive diamond drill at the Sonderditch No. 5 hole. "If you use that sack of custard that passes for a brain, you'd fight shy of trying to sink holes into this bunch of knitting," Popeye yelled into the mouthpiece. "I prefer to stick my old man into a meat grinder than put a drill into this ground. It stinks, I tell you. It's really ugly down there. God help the poor son of a bitch who tries to mine it." He slammed down the phone and stuffed his pipe with trembling fingers. 10 minutes later, his breathing had returned to normal, and his hands were steady. He picked up the phone again and dialed the number of the roadhouse. The proprietor answered. "Jose, tell my boys it's okay. They can come home now," said Popeye.